You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's day three, technically, of the Major League Baseball season. Almost everyone has played. There's still a couple of teams that we have not seen, including the Colorado Rockies, who will get their first run coming up at 5:10 tonight. We did get to see the World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers put on a show last night. Not only was the banner revealed and the rings were handed out, but they also put on a show knocking off the Arizona Diamondbacks 8-2. And it was a rough outing for Paul Skenes and really even Freddie Peralta in his debut with the New York Mets, and I thought that the Boston Red Sox definitely looked the part to be an AL contender. We're going to talk about that and more. The overreaction from day one of the Major League Baseball season, and joining us to have that conversation, we have my great friend Steve Bordstein. Steve, always a pleasure to get you on, especially now that we have meaningful baseball essentially for the next 7 months.
What a great time of year it is. But I do want to correct you on just one little thing you said there in your opening, where you said they are the defending World Series champion. The Los Angeles Dodgers are the back-to-back World Series champion.
Correction. Yeah, you are correct. And I will say that they looked the part again to be a team that we know they're going to be in the running for a three-peat, right? But I think one of the things that always concerns me about a team going for a third straight championship, you got to remember, this has not happened since the beginning of the 2000s. We got to go back to 2002 when the Kobe and Shaq Lakers accomplished a three-peat. No other team in North American sports, professional sports, have been able to accomplish this. And I think complacency sets in from time to time. Steve, last night, there were no signs of complacency, which tends to happen when you look at banner night in any of the sports. The Dodgers were great last night.
And I think the indicator of how frustrating it's going to be for opponents, particularly in the National League West, you got that look when Zach Gallen, who started for the Arizona Diamondbacks last night in Dodger Stadium, went through the lineup pretty effectively that first run through, those first three innings. You know, he was pitching fairly well, and then they had a 2-0 lead, and you're thinking, okay, the complacency, come on, you know, it's time for the Dodgers' engines to start to roar. And once they did, there was that look on Zach Gallen's face, and I think we're going to see that look, especially early on, that, oh, wow, this team is really loaded. Because it started with the bottom third of the lineup. It started with a base hit from Max Muncy. Teoscar gets on board with an infield hit. Andy Páez gets on board. And it was the bottom third of the lineup. And then that contributes to the top third of the lineup. And then you realize just how good that lineup is. And if the pitching can hold up, which again, that's always an issue, not just for the Dodgers, but for any team in the position that they're in. You have to think about that look on Zach Gallen's face of like, I did everything right, and now we're losing 4-2.
And I think
worse from there.
We'll talk about Kyle Tucker a little bit later and the ramifications of what this has with the Cubs and how they moved on from Tucker and what they've done with that money. But you and I were talking during that last break, and I brought up the idea, having Kyle Tucker in this lineup, batting out of the two spot, which was filled by Mookie over the last couple of years. You move Mookie down to three. Yeah, it looks like a cheat code, but the biggest cheat code for me is not only Kyle Tucker batting second, but it's Teoscar Hernandez hitting seventh and playing out in left field. Remarkable when you think about this.
You can be fast. Teoscar Hernandez doesn't look like the fastest guy in the world, but he's got some speed. But you can't be speedy and sort of erratic in right field, particularly at Dodger Stadium, because that's a long gap to cover in that right field corner at Dodger Stadium. You can be fast and effective in right field, and Kyle Tucker fills that bill. But moving over Teoscar to left field is exactly where he needs to be, because it's not so dangerous, those corners in left field, as they are in right field at Dodger Stadium. So I think having Teoscar in left, having him in the bottom third of that lineup where he can can move runners along, he can start a rally. Those are important things to have over there for Teoscar Hernandez. Andy Páez was amazing in center field last night. If he's the everyday center fielder, I think the Dodgers are fine with that spot for him. So I was happy with it. We'll see what happens tonight. Emmett Sheehan's going to be on the mound for the Dodgers tonight in Game 2 against the Padres. Against Diamondbacks, excuse me. And I'm kind of curious as to what we're going to see from Sasaki. He was not good in his most recent, his final spring training start. I'm not sure if it's just something emotional, mental with him. I don't know what it is, but there's days he's brilliant and there's days you just scratch your head wondering, how is this guy the number four starter in this rotation?
Speaking of lineups that really caught my eye, and the Dodgers right now, cream of the crop, there's no question. However, when I watch the Philadelphia Phillies, I can't help but be amazed by this lineup as well. And I think if you look at the rotation, if healthy, Zach Wheeler, Chris Sanchez, Jesus Luzardo, Aaron Nola, if it's Andrew Painter or Taijuan Walker, they have a solid five. They can go six deep. I'm watching the Phillies, and at the back of this lineup, they have JT Realmuto, who over the last 5-6 years has become one of the most potent hitters from the catcher position, not only in the National League, but in Major League Baseball. This lineup is going to be a problem for a lot of teams. I was high on Philly last year. Steve, I'm high on them again. I think front to back, this is a better lineup than what the Mets have, and I think this is the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the National League if Philly stays healthy.
No, you look at Justin Crawford, what he was able to do in that first game.
Yep.
You know, 2-for-4, got a run scored. He's impressive. I mean, that's a formidable team, no question about it. And you got the veteran experience. You mentioned Schwarber. You've got all those. You got Harper. That's a veteran team. They're going to be very, very tough to beat in that National League East, particularly.
Let's talk about a team out of the Central, the Chicago Cubs. We were mentioning Kyle Tucker a few moments ago, and I know that there were a lot of Cub fans that were a little bit upset when he left. Did they have the money to extend Tucker? They did. Okay, but ahead of a lockout, I want to ease Cubs fans' minds here a little bit, because I believe they got a heck of a deal in extending Pete Crow Armstrong. I think the PCA extension was outstanding, and when you take a look at the dollar amount, I believe it's going to age very, very well. They get him on a 6-year, $115 million contract. Again, this is before the lockout. This deal will start in 2027, and I'm assuming there's going to be a lockout, and it does not include a club option, which means he doesn't hit free agency before he turns 31 years old. They follow that up with a 6-year extension for Nico Horner, who I believe is one of the most complete infielders in the National League. He's only 28 years old. I absolutely love what the Chicago Cubs have done with the assets, the money they save by not extending Kyle Tucker. I know in a vacuum, it looks bad that you let him walk after 1 year and he goes to the Dodgers, who are the evil empire. But Steve, I'm curious as to your thoughts. If I was a Cubs fan, I would be very happy with the way the last 7 days have played out.
Absolutely. I mean, the PCA deal is great. The Nico Horner deal was bigger, I think. It's a 6-year contract extension. He led all second basemen last year in the WAR department. He had .297, had a tremendous postseason. I liked that deal just as much as the PCA deal. So I think if you're a Cubs fan, I think there's a lot of optimism there right now with that team going forward. So I understand no one wants to lose a player of Kyle Tucker's caliber, whether you're the Mets and Edwin Diaz or you're the Cubs in Kyle Tucker. No one wants to lose a player like that caliber to the Dodgers. You're not losing your own talent. Your own talent is still there. PCA is a great deal. Herner's a great deal. These guys are going to be very good going forward for the Cubs.
And let's not forget, they also brought in Bregman. Right. So I think when you consider you lose Tucker, but you bring in Bregman, you extend PCA and Nico Horner, I think it's a pretty solid few months for the Chicago Cubs. I think they should be happy. I want to stick in the Central for just a moment. I want to get your thoughts on Paul Skenes and what went down yesterday. I mean, obviously, it's earth-shattering news when someone who has been so dominant over the course of his young career does not get out of the first inning. I cannot stress this enough, Steve. I didn't think that Paul Skenes looked that bad yesterday. I think the single most overrated player in the National League is O'Neill Cruz. And the reason Paul Skenes did not get out of the first inning yesterday was because of his inability to field routine flies out of center field. Paul Skenes got absolutely no help. Okay, and if I'm a Pirates fan, I look at the 11 runs given up. I'm going to go ahead and point directly to O'Neill Cruz and his, I don't even know, his complacency, his laziness, whatever you want to refer to it as, in center field. This Pirate team, I think, is pretty good.
I don't think this is going to be a blight much on Skenes. I think this is more a blight on the Pirates' inability to do much of anything in the offseason to get some help for him defensively. Look, a pitcher's best friend is always going to be the players behind him. And he didn't have that yesterday.
No.
So, yeah, it's fun for us, you know, to watch a high-profile guy, you know, get bombed in his first game, you know, all the hype surrounding him and everything. But I don't think this was so much on him as much as when, you know, O'Neill Cruz should have caught that ball in center field. He misreads it. You know, I mean, there's just so many things that went wrong for him yesterday. I don't think it's going to, I don't think this is going to be a blight much on his overall body of work this season.
I don't either. I don't think there's a whole lot to worry about. And again, I like this Pirates team, especially if Henry Davis can effectively hit the ball behind the plate. I like this Pirates team. Again, being joined right now by Steve Bortstein as we talk opening weekend for Major League Baseball. Steve, let's move over to the American League. Cream of the crop in the East once again. Best division in the AL. I don't think there's any question about it. We did get to see the Yankees right now going up against the Giants. We saw them on opening night. The Red Sox and Garrett Crochet. He looks like a potential front runner for the Cy Young right up with Tarek Skubal. And then you got the Baltimore Orioles that played really good baseball out of the gate as well. Am I wrong in saying this division right here may decide three wild card spots? Two for sure. I think three teams from this division get in. But when you look at the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Orioles, and the Blue Jays, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that there are four teams that don't get in.
No, I don't think it's a problem at all. And look, the Yankees look great in the opening day game. That despite the fact that Aaron Judge went 0-for-4 with four strikeouts.
Right.
So they're fine. I mean, look, the Yankees are going to be fine. You know, and we know that going in. Boston, like you mentioned with Crochet, Baltimore, Toronto, even Tampa Bay. That division will decide so much of what happens to everyone else in the American League. And it's, you know, and if you're a fan of another team in the American League, I almost feel bad for these other teams because it's so unfair when you look at the American League Central. You've got Cleveland, Detroit. Detroit looked great, I thought, in their game yesterday against San Diego. You look at Houston, what they're able to do. At Seattle, I mean, there are some very good teams there, but they're going to be overshadowed a lot by almost everything coming out of the American League East these first couple of months of the season, especially.
Should it be a concern for any of the teams in the AL East that when you look at the Tigers and we look at the rotation with Skubal, Valdez, Flaherty, you can throw Verlander in there. He's a back half starter. You go out, you get Kenley Jansen now as the closer, right? You look at the lineup with Torkelson and you have Torres and you have Baez and Riley Green. I mean, this is a pretty good lineup, and I don't know that they are necessarily going to be pressed in the division. Let's not forget that last year it became a race down the stretch, but they had a monumental collapse late. I believe that they are heads and tails better than any team in the Central, and that includes the Kansas City Royals, who have been the sexy pick. They've almost taken on the role of the Toronto Blue Jays from the previous 5 years, right? Where all the pundits and all the analysts, they love what Kansas City has, but they're not turning that into wins and losses up until last year for the Blue Jays. Toronto was a very disappointing team for the previous four seasons.
Kevin McGonigal, the 21-year-old for Detroit, like, he's going to be a key to that team. If he continues to hit the ball like he did in that opening day game, then, you know, he's a reason why maybe they don't have that tailspin that they went through last year. And again, how much of that tailspin, that the worry of that tailspin is going to play into how the Tigers are going to approach the future. And the future, of course, being Tarek Skubal. And how much longer he's going to be in that organization. Because if this team goes into that tailspin, you know, early July, and suddenly he's looking around like, you know, because he's going to be the most wanted guy in late July when that free agency time comes along and that trade deadline rolls along. That's going to be that's going to be so important. Forget 26 even so much, but barring an extended lockout in 27, how much of a future Tarek Skubal is going to have with that organization is going to be so dependent on how efficient this Tigers team is in these next few months.
Steve, there are a few teams that we have not seen play yet, including the two teams that we'll see tonight at 5:07 in the American League. That's the A's and the defending AL champion Toronto Blue Jays. Toronto's going to look a little bit different. They have a lot of injuries, specifically to the rotation right out of the gate. And I made a bold prediction yesterday that I expect the A's to get into the playoffs. That is my bold prediction that is sure to go wrong. I like this young group. I think it bodes well for Major League Baseball if Las Vegas can inherit a winner. I know the A's have been historically bad over the last few seasons, but I do believe this is a team that can turn the corner, and because of that, I am thoroughly interested in this series this weekend between the A's and the Blue Jays, which again begins today, or tonight rather, at 5 o'clock, about an hour off.
Wow.
That's my bold prediction. I think the A's get in.
Wow!
You're not seeing it. You're not buying it.
I want to meet the guy who sold you that good stuff.
Just no individual has sold me that. I look at this roster and I believe the A's are going to make a push. I really do. I think there's a lot to like here.
I wish I could share your enthusiasm. I just don't. I've yet to see this A's organization do anything right. They didn't. I mean, I'm not a fan of them. I'm not a fan of them at all this year. I agree with you though about the Blue Jays. They're going to look different. But I think the key to the Blue Jays is this season is going to be how effective they're going to be on the mound. They already start off at a bad spot right now. Trey Savage starts off the season on the injured list right now. I think how this team will fare pitching wise is going to be dependent on just whether they have a real serious contending bid at being a World Series contender, or if they're going to be a team fighting for a playoff spot sometime around August or September. The Savage thing, I think that's going to be an injury that's going to be a bigger story as this season goes on. It's a shoulder impairment, so I'm not sure if that's going to get better anytime soon, and you're going to have to really, you know, tiptoe the line with him, I think, these first few months of the season for Toronto. But yes, other than that, I think they're going to be okay. They're going to be a contender again in that American League East, but how their pitching fares is going to be dependent on how far they go.
Let me go back over to the A's for one moment. Because I agree with you on the Blue Jays. I do. They've got to get healthy in the rotation. But I'm gonna up the ante here on the A's. And I want you to be the first one to call me out if this does not happen. Kurtz finishes top three in the AL MVP voting. He's not going to win the AL MVP because it's kind of like the NL, right? I mean, I think Kyle Schwarber was honestly the NL MVP a year ago. Otani's got that on lockdown. I think Aaron Judge has the AL MVP on lockdown. If Cal Raleigh couldn't win it last year, no one's going to upend Aaron Judge in that realm. Nick Kurtz finishes top three in the AL MVP race. He also finishes top three in home runs this year, and the A's get into the playoffs.
Wow.
That's my bold prediction for the season. I think we see Nick Kurtz is going to have a breakout season. If you play fantasy baseball and you're in one of those mixed leagues where you get NL, AL, you should be all over Nick Kurtz. I'm very high on this team. I really am. Something weird happens every single season in Major League Baseball, does it not?
Oh, yeah.
This is it this year.
This is beyond weird.
I'm telling you.
Well, I'm the same way about another team.
Let's hear it.
In the other league.
Let's hear it. Your bold prediction.
For it every year. Okay. Every year I fall for one team that I'm like, yeah, I saw something in them. And then by mid-May, I'm like, what the hell did I see in them? My team is Cincinnati.
Okay.
My thing is the Cincinnati Reds, and I know I shouldn't believe in them because all they do is find other ways to fail every single year. But they're the ones I'm kind of looking at this year. They've already got guys on the injured list. You got Ferguson; he's out for a little bit of time right now. They got a couple of other pitchers that are already, you know, kind of going through some IL issues right now. But there's something about that lineup. There's something about De La Cruz. There's something about that lineup that just has me thinking they're going to make a run this year. We'll get to mid-May and we'll see where our teams are by Memorial Day this season, and we'll kind of go from there.
Baltimore was that team last year for me, right? I mean, they.
I remember that.
Yeah, they made me look like a fool in regards to the Cincinnati Reds. Andrew Abbott looked the part as a legitimate ace yesterday, and I think that was a question coming into the season, right? He was an all-star. There's questions, though, about his velocity. How is he going to fare now that Hunter Green is going to be on the IL? We don't know that he pitches this year. Right now, projected to come back in July. I will say this with the Reds. Hunter Green has become one of my favorite players, one of my favorite pitchers to watch in baseball. If you can weather the storm and get him back in July, and he looks like the Hunter Green that we've seen over the last couple of seasons, yes, legitimate contender. You got to think that if you can, you know, Matt McClain had a great spring, right? He had a very, very down year. He's so important to this lineup. If you could acquire a pitcher to the caliber of Hunter Green mid-season and you were in the thick of things, why not Cincinnati?
Right. That's where, and especially in that division. Right, especially in that division, which aside from the Cubs and the Brewers, maybe if they can get their act together, the Cardinals, I think they're still on the rebuilding phase. The Pirates, I think that, again, they will rise and fall as Paul Skenes goes this season. The Reds are a contender in that division. I don't think there's any, I think they're going to make a serious bid.
He is Steve Bordstein, always kind enough to join us today talking Major League Baseball. Steve, before I let you go, let's talk about where we can find more of you.
Oh, online, you can follow my work. I cover a lot of high school, college, pro sports over at our website, our newspaper, Tri-City Record NM. That's Tri-City Record, all one word, NM. That's for New Mexico, .com. You can find my work there. Getting ready for another exciting season of prep the college baseball out this way right now. So we're excited about that and just trying to stay one step ahead of everything.
Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on. Love talking baseball. I know we're going to have plenty more to talk about in the very near future. Thank you again for the time.
Absolutely. Anytime, my friend.
Always a pleasure to get Steve here on the show. Let's pause for just a moment. I do want to close out the week by talking some NFL football. I know everything has really been geared around baseball, college hoops, but what about the NFL draft? We are about a month away. We're going to talk about that when we return. It's Drive Time Sports, live from the Sutherland Studios.